There's a lot to enjoy about winter, and there are a lot of ways to have fun outdoors at this time of the year. I was thinking about yesterday. Daughter Emily had a basketball game, but then after a tournament, actually played three games. And then we went skating, ice skating. And when the ice skating was over, we went sledding. And I don't think anybody was injured. But that doesn't mean it couldn't have happened. Oh, man. Larry Mueller here. Really great to have right across from you chuckling right now as we speak. But Bill Boisenall, professor in the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Spine Center, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Bill, great to see you.
Larry, thank you. Good to be back, and Happy New Year. It is 2014, ready or not.
It is. And Laurie Tyne Brody with us by phone today, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Laura, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Home with a sick child. That's part of the winter, you know.
Yes, it is. It's been a pretty intense winter so far, and temperatures have been pretty low overall. There have been some periods of thawing and refreezing, and of course that means ice. Are you seeing a lot of injuries from falls?
Oh, in our staff alone, rotator cuff tear, hip fracture, pubic rami fracture, just in our staff. From slips and falls on the ice. And so, yeah, it's been a very bad winter for that.
Yeah, it hits everybody. And Larry, you mentioned earlier about, you know, when you fall, the first thing, I've fallen once so far this winter. First I checked, was any broken bones? No. And then I looked around, anybody see me fall? You mentioned about an injured ego, and that's part of it. That's the least of it. But it has been a nasty winter so far in that regard.
And the injuries, mostly, I suppose, sprains, ACL tear.
Well, I think like Laurie said, I mean, shoulders, wrists, yeah. You know, wrist injuries, ankle, you know, those are probably the body parts that get involved the most.
Yeah, fractures.
Yes.
If we do fall, what kind of treatment should we be giving ourselves at home?
Well, the first thing is, as Bill said, to make sure there's nothing broken.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems a little obvious, but some fractures aren't so obvious. For example, if you fall on your outstretched hand, you can sustain a wrist fracture that you might not be aware of. You might say, oh, I just sprained my wrist. But there are some, a particular one bone in there that has a tendency to break that will just feel like a wrist sprain, and it has a very difficult time healing. So it's important to seek medical advice if you're at all concerned that it might be a fracture. And, you know, then after that, it goes to your standard RICE recipe: rest, ice, compression, elevation.
Yeah. And how long do we keep that up at home?
Well, it...
Before we do something else.
Yeah, exactly. You know, usually, 24 to 48 hours. And you know, rest is a relative thing. It's not that you're in bed, but that you're not overusing whatever part it is. So if it's an ankle, you're not up, you know, standing for hours or going to the gym and walking 2 miles, things like that.
Yeah, Lori's right. There's not always a bone that's sticking out to where it's obvious and there's a fracture, and especially areas like the wrist, like Laurie mentioned. And so, you know, if people fall on an outstretched hand, there's some swelling, you know, significant loss of range of motion, you know, at the wrist. You know, you can touch different spots, and if you hit a really tender spot and it's pretty clear you're on bone, you know, you should go in and have that checked out, because there are certain bones that don't heal well, and you want them treated as quickly as possible.
Well, we have callers who have questions for you. I'll give that number again, 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've had a nasty winter fall. How long did it take to recover? Have you ever been injured sledding? Things we can talk about. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Appreciate it. Alex in Green Bay, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. So this isn't a slip hurt or anything, but I strained my back this winter. And I was kind of curious what your guest thoughts were on that.
So, Alex, how long ago did this happen?
Just 2 days ago.
2 days. And was there an injury, an accident? Were you lifting something? What brought it on?
I was helping a friend with his workout routine, and essentially he threw a ball to me, and I was kind of in this hunched position. You could imagine my hands were slightly in front of my waist, and he threw the ball as hard as I could, or as he could at me, and I threw it back at him. And so I was kind of catching it with my back, I think, and then, you know, of course, throwing it and extending my hips, and then throwing it back at him. And then it didn't give me a sensation of, like, a pop or anything where I knew I should stop right away. It was actually after I sat for a bit, and then I stood up, I realized that I'd hurt myself and didn't really move around too well.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. Well, that's a pretty common way for some people to strain their back. Are you having any symptoms in your legs at all? Pain, pins and needles, numbness?
No, I would say no pins or needles.
Okay. Are you having
or numbness?
Okay.
Any pain shooting into your leg, especially below your knee?
No, definitely not below the knee. The only part of my leg that could hurt is maybe, you know, if you really extended the anatomy of the leg to basically the top of the hip.
Okay. But. All right. Okay. Well, then I would view this as like you've turned over your ankle. You know, you rolled your foot in and rolled over that ankle a little bit. And so, you know, as with most people with what you described, you should recover within 2 to 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks at the max. I would be careful lifting and throwing, especially with your trunk bent forward. Because, again, that would be like taking that ankle and turning it in the direction that it was injured. So it's important that you are moving around and that you're doing things, but, you know, doing sit-ups and doing, if you're doing a lot of weightlifting, the squats require bending against resistance. I would hold off on that for a few days. Gently stretching your back and doing it in what we call non-weight-bearing postures right now. So you're lying on your back, pulling your knees up toward your chest, lying on your back with your hips and knees bent and gently rocking your knees from side to side, getting a little bit of gentle twisting. Lying on your stomach and pushing up, so you're arching your back, are all very gentle ways to keep your back moving. The big warning signs are if you start getting pain down below your knees, if you start having any numbness or tingling, then that suggests that there's some nerve involvement. But it's unlikely that's going to happen with you based on what you're describing now within the last couple of days. Lori mentioned before the rice, you know, the rest and ice. And, you know, resting is avoiding the repetitive bending and heavy lifting in a forward flex posture or position. You can use ice until you start feel like you're getting your flexibility back. And but it's important that you stay active and you don't need bed rest or anything like that at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Alex. Kay and Madison, I'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I recently took a falls prevention class. I'm 66, and I found that to be helpful, but I'm heavy and short, and I have fallen a couple times in the last 6-8 months and had a near fall, and it always is when I'm stepping up onto a step or a curb, if there's no railing or if I'm carrying something. And I'm wondering if there it feels like my legs are just not very strong for the size of my body, and I'm wondering if there are special exercises I can do, or if seeing a physical therapist would help.
Oh, those are great questions, Kay.
Yeah.
Yes, certainly there are exercises that you can do to strengthen your legs. So, do you have stairs at home?
No.
Okay. Do you have even a step into your house?
No. I was pretty careful when I moved to have no steps. But I do have a lot of steps, like at my church.
Okay.
And sometimes I use them, but I find that I have to use my arms to kind of pull myself up the stairs.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
Rather than the strength of my legs.
Right. Well,
or else I take the elevator, you know.
There are several options for you. One is you can purchase little training steps that you might get for in your home, and you can put it in between a doorway and practice stepping up using the doorway for some support to try to strengthen yourself. You can also use a chair at home, a chair with arms, where you practice standing up from a sitting position and sitting back down several times a day to help strengthen your legs. You can go to your church or, you know, someplace else that has stairs and practice, you know, stepping up and down now and again. For, you know, for example, in a mall, you might walk a couple laps and then do a couple steps or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you get into a swimming pool that has stairs, you can practice going up those stairs where you don't have all of your body weight on it to begin with because of the water's buoyancy. Mm-hmm. And certainly if you went to see a physical therapist once or twice, they could give you a number of exercises that you could do at home to help strengthen your hips and legs to help get yourself up those stairs. So it boils down to strengthening and practice. Those are the two key elements for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really glad you called. These are really good questions and important questions. And what Lori described are the best ways for you to strengthen safely at home. This has been going on for a half year, a little bit over. Have you seen your physician during this time frame and talk about falls?
Well, I haven't specifically talked with her about that, but I'm going to see her in a couple weeks anyway. So
okay,
that'd be the time then.
Well, make sure you mention the falls or the near falls, and you can let her know the things, because the weakness just could be from lack of use, and you need some strengthening. Sometimes there's medications that can cause some weakness, or there can be a nerve issue that's causing some weakness. So just, you know, as long as it doesn't get worse quickly the next couple of weeks, make sure you mention that when you go in.
Mm-hmm. There.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Kay, for calling. Appreciate it. Had a caller, Chris, said that she broke her shoulder twice falling on ice. Now she swears by the cleats you attach to your shoes with elasticized cords. One brand is Yaxtrak. She said they're inexpensive, and if everybody bought one, Bill and Lori would be out of business.
If only it were so simple.
No, they do make a difference. And footwear certainly makes a difference when you're out there on snow and black ice. And so we would have less business if everybody had those on their shoes.
Bill Boys and all, Lori Tide Brody, our guest today. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll join us today at noon as we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in words and music. It's Wisconsin's 34th annual tribute and ceremony, and it all begins at noon at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. And Jonathan Overby, our host for that. Right now, I'm your host, Larry Mueller, with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody from the University of Wisconsin. They are physical therapists. Bill's a professor in the School of Medicine, Public Health. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine. They've been guests, regular guests on our show for many a year, as a matter of fact. And it's always great to have them along. Certainly, if you have questions, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or comment there. Love to hear from you. Diana in Middleton is up next. So let's go to her.
Hi, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana. Thanks for calling. What happened to you?
Oh, well, I fell down on ice in my driveway.
Oh.
And my right leg folded like an accordion. My foot went directly up into my leg, and my knee went down. So I felt like I was a W.
Oh, I'm cringing.
It was a lot of pain, but I was able to get in the house, and I did use the ice, and I kept my foot rested. And limped when I was around. And then I noticed I had noticeable improvement on Friday. So I'm ambulatory, I'm driving, I'm walking. But at the very top of my foot, right where the leg meets the the foot. I still have some leftover sensation of pain and a very minimal amount of swelling. And throughout, it did not discolor, and it was minimal swelling. But I'm just wondering at what point and what could have been injured at the top of the foot.
Lori?
Where the leg meets the foot. Well, it's an interesting architectural design at the top of your foot where you have a bone called the talus, and it fits inside an arch that's made by the two shin bones that come down and kind of make those points. So when you kind of hyperflex, which is what I'm sensing happened, your toes kind of bent up towards your shin,
yeah.
Correct? Right. What happens is the ligaments in the front of your ankle get strained as you splay that arch, and so you can sprain those ligaments. So if you poke around in your tender in the front of your ankle, right where the ankle meets the foot, and kind of on the front aspect of those bones on both sides, I would guess that you strained or sprained that ligament. So if you have minimal swelling, is it feeling pretty normal, quote unquote, with just a little bit of pain, or do you have difficulty like twisting on it? Does twisting hurt?
No. Okay. And even to touch it, it does not hurt. I just have a sensation. And I keep thinking that's what I needed to know. Is it a ligament or a bone that's on top there? I have a feeling if it's a ligament, it's a matter of time and repair.
That's most likely the case. There are some odd things that can happen. So, for example, if you had that same mechanism and you twisted slightly, like your foot got folded up and then you twisted, you can shear off some of the cartilage and damage the bone because it's getting twisted or torqued inside that archway. But since it was a straight down, and because you have only a little bit of pain and not pain with twisting, I'm guessing you just sprained that ligament. And that does take a while to heal. So I just keep an eye on it and see if you continue to improve, and know that the last little bit of improvement is going to take longer than the first part of improvement.
I think that's fine. I'm glad to hear that. I didn't want to go see the doctor because I don't want to get sick in the clinic.
Yeah, that's the last place you want to be if you're healthy.
Well, that's what my thought was. So I think this is just a time factor, and I can live with that. I can take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and Diana, the fact that you're getting quite a bit better as a Friday, if it was a week and you were getting worse, not better, but it sounds like things are healing and moving in the right direction for you.
Thanks for calling.
Good. Excellent. Thank you.
Dan in Highland, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I have a question about cramping from exercising, and I'll get severe leg cramps when I do certain activities, and one of them would be this time of year if I was to take a hike through the deep snow, and if I go out for a few hours just hiking, and I come back that evening in my thigh, just above my knee there, that thigh muscle up there, it just cramps up as hard as a board. The other times that would happen is if I was just out hiking, if I worked a lot on a hillside, for instance, and the same thing happens, and I want to know maybe what I can do to prevent it, or even when I get those severe cramps at night, what I should do.
Yeah. Well, Lori, what do you think?
Well, cramping from exercise can be due to dehydration. So, the first thing that comes to mind is I wonder if he's staying hydrated, if he's out hiking for 3 hours or so, if he's sufficiently hydrated. And it may manifest later after he's been immobile for a while. The muscles can cramp up. There's other nutritional components such as, potassium levels and so on. But I also wonder if he's got some issues with his back or some vascular issues that are causing some claudication or other, vascular problems that would produce that cramping. So I didn't catch what the second thing was that caused the cramping after the hiking.
Possibly hillsides. Whenever I work on hillsides themselves, if I'm cutting wood or anything like that, on hillsides, that seems to be to really activate it. And then hours later, the cramps will set in.
Well, both of those activities require a lot of thigh strength. But, you know, your thigh is a less common place for you to get cramping. Typically, people cramp in their calves and so on. So it makes me wonder if there's something postural or something within the pelvis with that sort of forward flex position and the high knee position that's getting occluded. Yeah. So, Bill, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Lori. Dan, how long has this been going on?
Year for the last probably 5-6 years, and it's only those two activities. Other than that, I'm very active. I ride bike. I work all day long. I walk all day long. But these specific activities, it's every time in the winter time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, two specific things.
All right. And has it gotten worse in the last, you know, the last couple months, or is this the way it's been? Okay.
It's the way it is. If I know I'm going to go out this weekend on a hike, I just dread it, because that night I know I'm going to get a cramp. And it's just above the muscle, just above the knee to the left side.
Okay. All right. Have you seen a physical therapist at any point along the way, Dan?
No.
You know, a visit might be useful. They can do some manual muscle testing. There may be a couple muscles in particular that are just weaker than they should be for you, even as active as you are. Like Lori mentioned, the physical therapist also would talk to you about your health history. Is there anything in your health history that might set you up for developing this? But it may be some specific strengthening could help you get over the hump with this. You know, clearly, time alone is not going to take care of this for you. It would have been gone a long time ago. So you may have some localized weakness related to those specific activities that are setting you up for this, in addition to the hydration issue or some of the dietary issues. And that's also something that the therapist could help you with, or maybe direct you to see someone else related to the dietary issues, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder if typically when you're biking, it's common to take your water bottle and stay hydrated. But I wonder if you're working in the woods and you're taking a hike, if you are remaining sufficiently hydrated. And, you know, for some people, it may not matter. But some people may just have a system that's a bit more sensitive to that and may need more fluid during the activity time.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any trick, when you do get these severe cramps, to when you're getting them, how to get rid of them at the time? Is there any tricks to what I take a walk or sit still? What do you do when you get the cramps?
Well, let's back up. What have you tried? I mean, so you're laying in bed and you get these cramps. I presume you've tried some different things.
Just rub it. Just rub it and stand up and just rub that spot real softly.
Okay. So when you stand up, it doesn't change? When you change positions from being in bed to getting up, it doesn't change?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so then typically massage is one of the best things to do, is just gently rubbing it, using your hands to try to get it to relax, doing some deep breathing and see if you can focus not on getting more worked up, because typically when that happens, you kind of go, and your heart rate goes up, and you end up getting this vasoconstriction, which probably makes it worse. So if you can train your mind to, okay, I'm going to breathe, I'm going to relax, I'm not going to get worked up, perhaps it'll go away faster.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Dan. We had winter sports and activities. One of them, we were doing it last night, actually, with the daughter Emily and the two neighbor kids. Noah and Ava were sledding after skating, and nobody was injured, but there are some injuries that are pretty associated with sledding, are there not?
Yeah, well, I just saw a friend's daughter last week who injured her ankle sledding. And to me, this goes to the importance of making sure your health provider is asking you the right questions. So she was sledding and she hit her ankle into some other object or something. And so they took her to the urgent care. They took some X-rays. Then they said, "Oh, you broke it. Put her in a boot." Brought her back here. Saw our doctor again, who took more X-rays and said, "No, you didn't break it." But the point is, she said you just sprained it. So I said, well, what were you wearing on your ankles? And she described her boot, which is a very strong boot that laces up.
Yep.
So the odds of actually spraining your ankle when you're in a boot are not very great. So you really have to make sure that your provider is asking the right questions to get to what the real problem is. So in sledding, you know, really you're talking mostly fractures and contusions.
Yeah.
They're impact-related problems. And I don't, I haven't been at the sledding hills in Madison recently, but I'm wondering how many kids are wearing helmets when they're sledding. How many kids were at your place, Larry?
Not a single one.
Yeah, I wonder how long it will be before sledding becomes like biking, where you need to wear a helmet, because the speed, the uncontrolled speed that some of these kids have going down on moss, down these big hills, you know, there's been a number of, you know, traumatic head injuries from skiing, and sledding isn't that terribly different.
Yeah.
So I have my kids wear their ski helmets when they sled.
Yeah, Laura, you're right. It's kind of at either end, you know, the head injury or the foot mm-hmm. and ankle injuries and fractures. And,
yeah.
you know, if it's difficult to convince kids to do this, but maybe the first time down the hill is just to kind of go down half speed, check out the runs. What's waiting for you at the bottom? You know, is it kind of wide open and you just slowly come to a stop? Are there barriers at the bottom that you'd be careful with your speed as you're approaching those? Are there rocks, you know, again, depending on any exposed rocks that you may not note until you go over them? And if you're going down full speed versus half speed that first time. And then the crowd, you know, going down en masse, as you mentioned, it's ripe for injuries occurring.
We had Jennifer told us about her sad story. Her daughter and she were heading down the hill on a sunny day and hadn't noticed that some innovative youngsters had built a ramp out of the snow right in their path. And we caught some air, came down hard on her tailbone. Luckily, icing an injury like that is easy. You just stay sitting on the hill. Later, through an MRI, she found out she had torn her labrum and her hip socket.
Oh, boy.
Doctor said that was possibly due to how she landed.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not unlike driving, you know, where you control yourself, but really the biggest risk are the other drivers on the road. So, you know, you may, you know, be aware of the hill and ramps and things like that, but you also have to be very aware of the uncontrolled sledders around you that are going to wreak havoc for you. So, so checking out the hill, watching the other sledders and how they're sledding, and you say, you know what? When that kid's going down, I have to wait until he gets to the bottom before you go.
Right. Stay behind them at a distance.
Listener Jill said that ingesting, this goes back to muscle cramps, ingesting a teaspoon of prepared yellow mustard takes care of muscle cramps. Have you ever heard that?
I have not
I wonder when you do that. Do you do it before bedtime? Or?
I wonder. She didn't say.
Maybe she'll
let us know.
Yeah.
Come back and let us know. Yeah. Sally in Madison, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I have a cold, too. But I'm not calling about that. About 18 months ago, I stepped off the sidewalk, and the grass was as high as the sidewalk, but it was longer than any of the other grass, so I ended up falling and doing a rotator cuff injury. And I went to PT, and I did the exercise bands, and I did very well. And then, lo and behold, along came the winter, and I started shoveling. And, oh, my goodness, sudden pain. So over the last year, over the summer, I did well. But as soon as I start shoveling again, I get it doesn't hurt so much at the time as it does at night. It'll wake me up with pain. So I wondered if I should go back to exercise bands or just let time once again take care of it. It's usually also with the heavy street sludge from the snowplow.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the time alone isn't going to take care of it. So you need to do some rehabilitation of it again. So, you know, going back to your bands, you know, that's certainly one strategy. I probably wouldn't go back to the heaviest bands when your shoulder is already sore. So your rotator cuff isn't going to like it if you throw a lot of resistance at it when it's already sore. So you're going to need to wait for it to calm down. You know, and then shoveling is a fairly, it's a heavy exercise, and it's pretty specific in that just doing standard rotator cuff strengthening doesn't necessarily prepare you for things like shoveling or vacuuming, both of which are hard activities on your shoulder. So, there are a few possibilities for attacking the shoveling. One would be doing it in smaller spurts so that you're not doing the duration is shorter. Increasing the frequency, that is, instead of waiting until it's done snowing and shoveling heavy snow once, shoveling lighter snow twice. It's helpful, and if you can train yourself to shovel using the other arm where you switch off, you know, I'm going to the sidewalk one day with this, and then the other side, or changing shovels. There are those big scoop shovels that you walk behind where you're not doing as much lifting.
Mm-hmm. I recommend John or Bruce or whoever, the name of the next-door neighbor boy.
Yeah,
That's the best thing.
Yeah, especially with the wet, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Sally, the things that Laurie mentioned could help you over time, but, you know, with the rotator cuff injury, even though you've healed and are doing most things, the shoveling really stresses that area. And it may be that it is just never easy for you with the wet, heavy stuff. So I agree with Larry. Having a backup plan with a neighbor for those kinds of snows may be the best thing for you.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Sally. John and Crescent, we are on to you now. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm thank you for taking my call. I have a little bit of a different story to tell, and it's going back to what you guys were talking about at the beginning of the program about when you have a fall on the ice, you stick your arm out to break your fall, and you guys were talking about wrist injuries and because of that. My injury happened in the same way. I don't even remember putting my arm out, but I think we instinctively do that. But it did not hurt my wrist. I read up about this later. The impact went up to my elbow, and my elbow was just fractured into little pieces of bone. I saw the X-ray before the first surgeon started working on it.
The first surgeon?
Shavers of bone in my elbow. So that night, the first surgeon put a plate and screws in it and put it back together again. I was in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. And then I went home. I was up in Ironwood, Michigan when this happened. And I came back to Rhinelander, and my orthopedic surgeon here did a second surgery, which involved a bone graft from my hip. So it's not just the wrist that can be injured, but not to break your fall. Now, after those two surgeries and being in a cast for a couple months, I guess, I could move that elbow about maybe 2 to 3 inches. And I was worrying about how I'm going to even button my collar. But I went to physical therapy, which I know you guys are interested in. And now I can not only button my collarbone, but I can use my arm to do just about everything that I could before except swing a golf club.
Oh, that is too bad. I would hate that.
It just ruined my golf swing. But I continued to go to physical therapy and am almost completely recovered except for that golf swing. And the reason that I continued on with that and was successful in that is because my physical therapist was a quite attractive young man.
he makes so many good points, and one of them is that to be successful, you know, sometimes you can manage with one or two visits to a PT, but sometimes you have got to continue going, and you've got to continue doing your exercises. And that's especially true with elbow injuries, because if you lose motion in your elbow, as John described, it's really difficult to get back. It's one of the toughest joints to regain your motion once you lose it. So I was pretty worried when he told me how stiff his elbow was. So
well, you've always suggested, too, that if you're doing it over a longer period of time, your PT is going to give you new ways of doing things. I've heard you both say,
right,
what you started with may not be what you need 2 months later or a month later.
Exactly. So the idea would be, and as you get farther down the road, your visits with PT are less frequent because the changes are slower. So, you know, the rate of seeing the PT should keep pace with the rate of change in your recovery. So usually more at the beginning as you're recovering more quickly, and then things will taper off and spread out your visits. But the other reason we mentioned the wrist was that can be an injury that gets overlooked. If you fall and shatter your elbow, you're probably going to know it, and you're going to go see somebody. But the wrist can be a little insidious, and people might not know that they've sustained a pretty significant injury. So that's the one we watch.
There we go. Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate your call. We've got a kind of an follow-up on the yellow mustard and cramps.
Uh-huh.
Listener Sue said it was from the People's Pharmacy show, their home remedy. It's a yellow mustard. You take a large spoonful of yellow mustard. You wash it down with water, and the cramps are relieved immediately. She said, I've been troubled with occasional cramps after unusual exertion. This remedy always works for me. It may sound awful, but the relief is worth it. Well, I don't know if so awful. You know, a big tablespoon of mustard and the yellow mustard.
And
the,
some mayo and an egg. And
mix it up. Well, whatever works. But if it doesn't work after a few attempts, then I would go to plan B and try some other things.
Yeah.
But if that's what works, perfect.
Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Talking, recovering from falls and sledding injuries, among other things, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Bill, professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. We had an email from Justin in Green Lake, I think it's kind of interesting, who says, my feet went straight out from under me in the driveway, and I landed on the back of my head upon it as a brick driveway. I was dazed but never unconscious as far as I can recall. When I decided I could get up, I did, and returned up the driveway to the house. My wife took one look at the blood streaming out and said, we're going to the ER. I'm glad we did. I'm on warfarin and am a bleeder. After a quick cleanup, they promptly did a CT scan, which fortunately showed no internal bleeding. 11 staples in the back of my head later, I was sent home, a concussion plus the damage to the back of my head. I've had the 11 staples removed, beginning to get around a bit better, but still suffering from mild headaches. Moral: be careful. You never know when it might happen, and it could have been much worse, particularly to persons like me who are bleeders.
Yeah, that's a scary story. He's very fortunate that his wife is home, and very fortunate he didn't have an internal bleed. Yeah, there are lots of people that are on blood thinners and many forever based on an underlying medical condition that they have, and relatively minor trauma can get those folks into serious trouble.
Yeah. David in Oshkosh, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm semi-retired and in my early 60s, and I've always had very good strength. I took a hard fall and landed on a pretty stiff right hand and didn't feel like I had any apparent injuries. Nothing seemed sore. My hand was a little raw. But about a month and a half to 2 months later, I developed fairly severe pain in that right shoulder, kind of strength issues, if I did anything repetitive or lifting or pushing, I would develop pain. And I was just wondering if it can take that long for, you know, symptoms to manifest themselves.
Hmm.
I also have some osteoarthritis, I know, in my knees. Okay. And so I kind of assume maybe I have some in my shoulders.
Okay. And David, nothing happened over the last, 6 to 8 weeks after the fall?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I was doing some fairly repetitive stuff when it kind of manifested itself, and I just didn't know if there's, you know, if things can take that long, or maybe it's another issue.
Laura, you would think if there was a rotator cuff injury or a labral injury that it would show up before 6 to 8 weeks, correct?
I would think so.
Yeah. If there was an acute injury, but it may have been that it stirred the pot just enough where, you know, it was typical daily activities, it didn't bother, but when he started doing repetitive stuff, that it flared up. Had you done anything repetitive like that? I mean, was it common for you to do repetitive activities with your shoulder?
Yeah, yes, it was. Yeah, I've always had very good strength and no issues at all.
Okay.
Prior to that. And I didn't really, you know, it took me a long time to kind of think of why is my shoulder hurting, and that's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, and no numbness or tingling, anything like that?
No, I sometimes get pain that goes all the way down to my elbow.
Okay.
Not very often, but it's mostly if I move it around in a circle, my shoulder.
Okay.
And if I have my arm lifting outwards, away from my body, sometimes that hurts. And pulling doesn't hurt it, but pushing does.
Yeah. I mean, that all sounds pretty rotator cuff-like. So it may be that your rotator cuff is, as you suggested, strong and it withstood the force of the fall, but probably damaged it just enough to where when you went back to doing repetitive stuff, it was no longer able to keep up with it. So it is possible to injure it and be relatively asymptomatic at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it isn't until you really put a demand on it that you notice the symptoms.
Yep. There you go, David. Thank you very much for calling. I want to give Lori and Shiocton a chance to join in. Lori, hi to you.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is I've had a pain to the right of my lower spine for many, many years. I attribute it to the fact that I'm constantly pulling barrels of wet shavings and manure out of my horse barn.
Yep.
I think it might be an SI joint problem, and it seems to get worse in the winter when I have to bend constantly to get through the door on my barn because I have four doors and three are shut.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, in the past, I have had some relief from the chiropractor. It's never been permanent. I do stretching exercises, and I have to say that over the last year, I was getting terrific pains in my legs, basically from my foot all the way up to my hip. I attributed that to the fact that I also had plantar fasciitis pretty bad. That has since resolved, but I think it's all related to some extent. Hmm. And I have fallen several times on the ice in the last probably 10 years, but the problem I have now is I'm having trouble sleeping, and I was wondering whether exercise bands would maybe help me. I'm not quite sure what to do at this point, but I am having trouble sleeping, so I need to do something.
Okay. And, Lori, the trouble sleeping is due to the right-sided back pain. Is that correct?
That's right. I can't get comfortable. I mean, I wake up every 5 minutes or so.
Okay. All right. Well, the sacroiliac joints, there's a joint on each side of the spine. It's the where the hip bone connects to the spine itself, the sacral area. And it can be a source of pain. In terms of the interfering with sleep, oftentimes interferes with sleep when people move or change positions in bed. And so I would try a couple things. Mattress, if you have a soft mattress, I would put a quarter-inch piece of plywood and put that between the mattress and the box springs and try to firm it up a little bit. If the mattress is really hard or firm, if you don't have a mattress pad on top to soften it, I would try that. And what position do you typically try to fall asleep in?
Well, and that might be a problem. I usually lay on my left side, but I will hug a pillow and wrap my right leg over the pillow.
Yeah.
It actually feels good when I lay on my back, but I can't sleep on my back. That's about the only relief I get is if I lay on my back.
Okay.
But that lasts about 2 minutes, and then I just can't sleep that way.
So is it pain when you sleep on lie on your back, or some other reason?
For some reason, I have trouble breathing on my back. Even with my head really elevated, I just can't sleep on my back.
Okay.
But that does make it feel a lot better. During the day, even when I sit, it doesn't hurt that bad. But when I sleep, it seems to get much worse. And I'm a side sleeper, so
okay.
And primarily on my left side with my right leg kind of anterior to my body.
Yeah.
Bent.
Well, that position and having a pillow or two underneath that top leg would be helpful. The other thing to maybe try with side is if you have an extra sheet laying around the house, is roll that sheet up and tie it around your waist so it kind of fills the space between your hip bone and your rib cage. And
okay.
put the knot in front of you so if you lie on your stomach, it'll keep you off your stomach. Sometimes that little extra support on the sides will help make people more comfortable in terms of the side sleeping. If that doesn't work, I'd go, if you've seen your physician, one, talk about the breathing difficulties when you lie flat on your back, and see if they can suggest anything else that hasn't been attempted yet. But I would try the rolled up sheet tied around your waist and see if that helps you.
Okay. So does that typically, one of my big concerns is it's hard for me to get up and down. So, when I'm bending over, it feels like I don't have a lot of strength to push myself up.
Okay.
That's when I get the pain. So that's why I thought maybe it was an SI joint issue.
Well, SI joint can cause right-sided back pain. There's other structures as well. If you're not doing any strengthening for your trunk or core stability type of exercise program, especially with your activities that you described before, it sounds like strengthening would be really, really important for you and not just flexibility or stretching.
Okay.
So some strengthening exercises could be very, very helpful for you.
And would the exercise bands be a good fit? Or?
Well,
if done correctly.
Yeah, if done correctly, but there's lots of ways to get at the core.
Okay.
And there sometimes exercise bands are in fact used.
Okay.
But for some people that can be too high level of an exercise program. And that's why I've seen somebody who can put you on a good exercise program and kind of dose the exercises for you so you're doing them appropriately and correctly and they're at the right level for you.
Mm-hmm. Because what I have been doing is not helping, so I'm assuming a physical therapist would be able to help me with that?
Yes, yep.
Okay.
Yep, they should be able to examine you and set up a good program for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. In our last minute here, any words of wisdom, Bill and Lori, about sledding or dealing with wintertime?
Sure. Well, discussing this last caller, one of the questions that keeps coming to my mind is, why is she having to bend over so much, and is she bending correctly? So maybe she should be learning a new strategy for you know, hauling the manure out of her barn or something rather than bending over and dealing with the door so that she doesn't have to bend over to go through the door. It seems as though getting to the cause of or what she identified as the problem creating the pain should be dealt with as well.
Thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Lori, thanks.
You betcha. It was great to check in by phone even.
Yeah, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine. Bill Boisenault, thank you so much.
Pleasure as always, Larry. Thank you.
Bill's a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Today, we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That coming up next on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.